Welcome to Tea to Tea, where we talk about the pipeline from saga tutor to classroom teacher and other roles in education. We'll dive into that journey and the ways that former saga tutors have leveraged their experience with saga to build a meaningful career in education. Thanks for joining us.
So I'm Darce, and I'm excited to talk with you today, Danielle. So do you want to give like a quick little intro of who you are, when you served the saga, where you served?
Yep. So I'm Danielle. I have been in education for about 5 or 6 years now. I served with saga at the beginning of my education journey back in 2020. Mm-hmm. And I did my fellowship year in Chicago at, I can't remember the school I worked at, but I remember I was in Chicago in the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And what motivated you to like serve in saga and join saga?
So I'd been toying with the idea of transitioning my career goals towards education, towards my senior year of college, you know, just like we all do. And so I picked up a couple of different jobs that were education related. Like I worked at a ballroom dance studio as a teacher. I worked in a youth home, but nothing was really fitting quite right. Then the pandemic hit. I was laid off from my job that I had at the time. So I thought this is a great time to kind of explore what else is out there for me career wise. I kind of stumbled upon saga, I think just kind of in a random job hunt. I applied and immediately as soon as they onboarded me, I was like, I'm on board with this. This is what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah. It's a great feeling, right? And you're like, wait, this actually works.
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So it sounds like you did have, this seems like a common theme. You had sort of adjacent educational experiences, but not maybe as much like a direct experience. So, and then while you're working with saga, what moments sort of reaffirmed that feeling that you had, that kind of spark of this is the right path for me?
I mean, honestly, my entire service year, I just kind of felt like this is the right path. Like starting with that kind of professional development training they do in those first 3 weeks in August, like day one, I had like gone over my notes and my mind had just been blown because I was like, this is how things should be running in education across the board. I know it's not how it is, but I feel so excited to be starting this journey with myself and with my career in a place that I feel totally aligned with when it comes to our values and our ideas of how students should be taught the more complex subjects in America.
Definitely. And I resonate with all that. And kind of going off that, like, were there specific values? You sort of said you like resonated with those core values. Do you want to like expand on that a bit, if you don't mind?
Yeah, I think the first thing that struck me was when I did math in my own in school, I was very rigid. I was very serious about always getting that right answer, making sure my answers were always correct. Like down to like, you know, the very letter, the very number. And the first thing they taught us, they're like, okay, so right answers don't matter. Mm-hmm. I immediately was like, well, of course they do. How do we know that they're learning? If they're not getting the right answers, it's math. But then they explained it's more about them showing that they can get the work. Any kid can do the work and then have a quick little flub and get the wrong answer, but still have all the work correct. We want to show kids that that is what is more important. It's all that build up to the final answer. Mm-hmm. That's what's important, is that's what shows you're learning. You can make a mistake. That's okay. And that might cause you to get the wrong answer. But so long as you show that you know what you're doing, then you've learned something.
Yeah, no, and I was like, a lot of the minds, I'm like math mindsets, all those mindsets, I remember like powerful reframes for me as well, coming in with the sort of mindsets that my own educational journey had kind of instilled in me.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree with that. Those were like sort of mind-opening moments for me as well. So as you were tutoring and such, during that process, were you already kind of forming the idea that you were going to continue on? And I guess this also just brings me to my question I meant to ask earlier, which is, what exactly are you doing right now? You know, where are you at, I guess?
Yeah. So right when I got the job with Saga, I had the opportunity to go back to grad school. So I took it. I started taking grad courses at Grand Canyon University. Mm-hmm. And in the process of me working with Saga, we had some channels in our Slack of like talking about different opportunities, especially for like different AmeriCorps opportunities, which is where I found my teaching certification program, which at the time was called Urban Teachers, but is now called City Teaching Alliance.
Okay. Yeah.
I applied through them because it was a certification program where you get your master's in education in your content field and special education at mm-hmm. Hopkins at the time. Now it's American University, but at the time it was Johns Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
And you also, in tandem, do your student teaching and start teaching as a teacher of record in the classroom. So it was kind of like an expanded model where you do this full year of student teaching with more and more release of control taken from the teacher of record and put onto you. And then by the time you're in your second year in the program, you're in your second year of grad classes, you are a teacher of record, you're getting paid a salary, and you're right. also earning that degree from Hopkins as well.
Right. Wait, so was this happening? That sounds really awesome. Was this right after you finished your service year? Do you apply to your service year? Or?
I applied during my service year, and so I ended up transferring from Grand Canyon to Hopkins and right. started Hopkins that summer right as I was finishing up those last few weeks of my service year.
You know, we're looking at how we can help build this pathway from poor Saga tutors who realize they do want to become teachers. So that's awesome that even while you're there was other people sharing. Were there people at Saga like helping you find those resources?
Yes. It was, I believe, like at the time she was like, I don't know if she's still there, but she was like our AmeriCorps coordinator, mm-hmm. like the person helping us like with, you know, making sure that we're gonna get our grant at the end of the year, like what information do we need to know about AmeriCorps? Are we interested in any other AmeriCorps programs? And so she would just kind of feed us information about those things through a Slack channel.
Okay, that's awesome. So basically you had a fairly smooth transition then from the end of your service year into that program?
Yep. So I started doing coursework and then I got placed at Forest Park High School in Baltimore City for my student teaching / moving into, and then I did end up getting hired to be a teacher of record there after my year of student teaching. And I worked there as a teacher of record for 2 or 3 years, I believe. And then from there, I had a move to Michigan and I transitioned to teaching at an alternative online program called Link Learning.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, in the midst of me starting my teaching there, they created a college and career counseling position. And throughout my whole time, even when I was with Saga, I always made that an important part of my classroom of let's make sure you're prepared for taking these skills that we're giving you now and putting them out into the real world in ways that are going to help you find a career, find a college, find whatever path awaits you.
Mm-hmm.
So when they opened up the interviews, I just kind of honestly laid out what I've been doing with my kids all this whole time with those things. They were impressed. And now I am the very first and only college and career counselor for 17 different centers all across the state of Michigan.
It sounds like you landed exactly where you both wanted to be, I guess, like where your skills were like best aligned.
Yep.
So that's great. And how has that experience been for you so far?
It's honestly just been probably my favorite job I've had so far, which I feel like I say every time I get a job, but like this, I think I truly mean it. I get to work with kids every day who have honestly, because Link Learning is in a model where like anybody can join, but like you have to know about it and want to join. A lot of the kids feel very passionate about their education and moving into the world at the right pace and at the right step. So I get to counsel some kids who are really passionate and some really already like well fleshed out plans for what they want to do with their life. But I also get to counsel kids who, you know, they will be first gen college students and they need all the help they can get with getting the information about college applications, FAFSA grants, all of those things. So I get to work just with such a wide variety of students and working with a team that is all really passionate about all of these kids, regardless of where they're at, where they're coming from, all of them being successful.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. It sounds very rewarding and also very, like, you know, kind of going back to those values in the mission, all very aligned to that mission of, like you know, equity and opportunity and all. Yeah, that's a great trajectory. Thanks for sharing that. But did you feel as though the skills you built and experiences you had while being a tutor, were those helpful in making that transition into that program and then your subsequent jobs afterwards?
Yes, absolutely. I think it comes in twofold in the ways that my specific year that I did my service with Saga really helped me become the teacher I am today. In one way, you know, it built me up to set my kids up for the success we're seeing works best for students now. Obviously, there's all this literature from, you know, the entirety of the history of man of how to teach people. And we're just kind of spending the past few decades, like, really honing in on what's working now for the current generation. And having experienced some of those things directly in the classroom while I'm learning them in my grad program at Hopkins really kind of opened my eyes to see, like, Saga is really on the right path. Mm-hmm. And it's set me up for success to continue working in education. The other way it helped set me up for success is it happened during COVID my service year. So mm-hmm. I already, you know, when I was in the classroom, like, hearing from my professors, like, this is how things normally go, but it's different now because of COVID. I could give my firsthand experience of, like, well, here's how we mitigated these problems with my program for tutoring during COVID, during the height of it, what worked, what didn't, and ways that we tried to still keep up engagement, still keep with our values while in a completely virtual setting.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. And I think Saga's remote, like, resources are very powerful and very useful. I'm assuming you probably use similar platforms as we currently do, like Saga Connect and Zoom.
Yeah. I've used some, but, like, nothing honestly has felt like a more dynamic tool than Saga Connect for me. I'll be completely honest. I've seen the other tools out there, like Jamboard and whatever else they have now. I've used a couple different ones, but like Saga Connect, for the most part, felt just so versatile as a tool that, like, during the times where it was, like, still free for use for the public, I was using it with kids and things. And I was always telling my math department at the school I worked at, because I did transition to teaching English. But I was always going to my math department and giving, like, the resources I had at Saga to them to help them with their practice and their craft.
Yeah, I thought Saga was awesome. I was always, like, impressed by it. And they were always, like, adding features even while I was there. And, you know, you've kind of mentioned a few times sort of the Saga model and how you sort of, like, really resonated with that and felt that was really, like, should be almost more widespread. Can you, like, talk a bit more about that? Like, specifically, what aspects of that model were you like, wait, is this really good?
I think that a lot of it is, on one hand, just, like, the way that we shift the gaze of what's focused for what success looks like at Saga from, you know, in a traditional classroom, we see, you know, A means success, right answers means success. You know, if you're not getting it right, you're not successful. And I think that taking that mindset and shifting it of, like, well, how did you get to that answer? And seeing all of, you know, the layers of work students are doing in their mind to get to that point has really kind of shot me into the stratosphere as a teacher. And we even kind of talked about in my grad program of how do we model that for students to show, like, that's what we really care about is that process. I would do a lot of, like, mental mapping with students of, like, here is, like, a poem on the board. I'm going to do, like, just, like, a think aloud of everything I'm thinking in my head as I'm diagramming and note-taking and, like, marking up this poem, because that's the important part that I want my students to get. I don't care if they can tell me what the poem really means. Mm-hmm. I care about what they're thinking to get to that answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Saga has instilled in me from day one of, like, it's not the answer, it's the work.
Totally, yeah. And I think especially today, like, that's, like, it's so easy to get a right answer, like, Googling, you know?
Exactly. So, like, that's the flip side of it, of, like, the students can, you know, find answers for any curriculum online now. Yeah. And if they can't find it, then AI can give them something that's going to be close enough. Mm-hmm. So I always was trying to garner my assignments towards students, like, okay, yeah, like, that's the answer. Maybe I'll even give it to you. That's the answer. Tell me how I got there.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you get there. And that's what I want to know.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, the student work is, you know, building, I like to, you know, building them as sort of mathematical thinkers in general, not just answer producers. How were you able to build your relationship building skills? I think that's a big emphasis as well, you know, in Saga and teaching in general. So
being COVID, it was definitely already, we were set up for what was going to be probably the hardest year for relationship building we'd ever seen ever in education.
Yeah.
Everyone's virtual. Kids don't have to have their cameras on. They can just log in, join the meet, turn their camera off and go FaceTime their friends, play on their phone, do whatever they want because they're in their own bedroom. They're comfortable and they know they just need to show up. So my team was very good. I think I was just very lucky to be given such an amazing team at Simeon and an amazing center director, Leslie Guthrie, who was no longer there, but she was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And all of us constantly, while we were thinking about the learning, what should the kids be learning? How are we going to get that across to them? We were also always thinking about how do we get the kids engaged? Because this is a year where they're going to struggle to stay engaged, which means their math learning is going to suffer not only with Saga, but with their main math class. And the point of us being here is to make sure that that doesn't happen in normal schooling. So we have to work twice as hard now that it's all virtual. So mm-hmm. we were always coming up with just kind of little bits to get them talking, get them thinking, get them conversing with us, with each other, all of those things. Like we always would have like a little, we'd have the entire class, even though we'd break off to our sections before we would do that, we'd do like a would you rather or like mm-hmm. a little like pop culture pop quiz, something to kind of keep things fun, maybe a little game, something to kind of like engage them for a second and keep them to like in that space of like, this is still learning. You're still in the classroom, even if it's a new way of learning. I think my favorite one we did is the one that I kind of brought to the table was Pi Day was on a school day that year. So I made the kind of morning little break before like we break off into our classes. I had them do a little competition. You have this amount of time to tell me this many digits of pi. And if you can do like so many rounds right in a row, I will pie myself in the face on camera.
That's amazing.
All six periods, I pied myself in the face. And I'm
that was a great motivation.
It was like the kids were just like, the chat was blowing up. They were all like so excited. They're like, they love to see the kind of incentive of like, if I do something, something crazy is going to happen. Mm-hmm.
So. And kids love to see like their teachers or whatever adult figures like do something silly.
And like March is also like that time where like March is like the drag of the year. So to break that up, that huge monotonous streak, I was Pi Day's right in the middle. I'm like, we're going to break up this kind of dullness with a little bit of fun.
Yeah. That's awesome. And it is really, I enjoyed the flexibility and freedom I think there was within Saga to create those moments, those creative,
Yeah, I remember I used to do like themed lessons. Like I did an Among Us theme one time because that was really big during COVID. Mm-hmm. I did a My Hero Academia because I had lots of kids that liked anime. We even kind of came up with like, we decided we were going to spend Tuesdays tackling these topics on that like we got back from like our test results that our students were struggling with the most. Mm-hmm. And so I came up with like a fake little town where they'd visit different shops and do different types of strategies and standards that they were showing they were scoring lowest on. There was just lots of fun ways to, make the learning fun, make it creative, and bring in some element of life into what I feel like we all grew up being, just like a black and white subject.
Yeah. Wait, these are great ideas. They give you a lot of good ideas and resources,
The most was fun for vectors because I could graph out the map and be like, okay, like you're dead, so you're a ghost, you can float through stuff. Like draw the vector and tell me how long it is. Or like to get from this room to that one. Then the town one, I still have that actually on my Canva. I look back at it and I'm like, man, this was really fun. I wish I could teach math again. It's just like,
I know, you're giving me great ideas because I'm actually going to be pursuing teacher licensure starting in the fall.
That's amazing.
For math teaching. So I'm like, I'm taking notes for myself right now.
Do what you want. Take it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll not steal your ideas. but just those are cool ideas to use. So continuing on, it sounds like you had a great, it sounds like overall, despite the challenges presented by the pandemic, which, obviously was such a challenging time, especially for education, you had a great team. So I was going to ask, were there specific supports you received from your team, from your coach that were really helpful in that journey?
Yeah, I really loved, I don't know if this was really specific to our site or if this was part of the model overall. I can't remember. It's just been a little bit too long. But, my site director, Leslie, was coming in like once every 10 days, pretty much, mm-hmm. to observe my lessons and give me feedback. And she was always like just very great about being like, here are the things I noticed you're doing really well. Here are the things that I noticed like could use a little work. And here's how I think you could make those changes and fix those little problems, like, and just be just fine. And like, look for next time. And she was like very honored. Like next time she was like, okay, I'm looking for that thing I talked about 2 weeks ago. Let's see if I see it or not. She was just very great about making it very tangible, like mm-hmm. improving my craft. Sometimes, you get these now when you become an actual teacher, it's all very kind of vague and, you get seen twice a year by your higher admin team, and they give you, and they see you just on one day.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, sometimes the feedback is relevant. Sometimes it's like, it was a weird day. So yeah. You don't know if I should take the advice or not. But yeah. You know, seen so often was a little bit daunting at first. But when I saw how much it was helping me grow as an educator, I immediately like started to look forward. And like, I would be like, "Ooh, Leslie, I really want you to come see this lesson with these kids, because I think it's going to be so great. Or I think you're really going to see the thing we talked about last time."
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I think that like it's getting that feedback is a scary thing at first, at least I think for most people, but especially if you have a site director you really like trust, then it's really useful for improving. So what was your, this is just a general question, but yeah, what was your favorite part of being, it sounds like you had a lot of favorite parts. So what was your favorite part if you had to choose one?
Gosh, I think right now what I would say is one of my favorite parts that I'll talk about, because I love the experience so much. One of my favorite parts was that as a team, we kind of decided that like, while we know our kids are struggling with not being in person, we're also struggling with not working with each other in person.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of team bonding. Like literally every week we did a team bonding like activity or exercise. So usually we would do game night and would always play code names. And like we got really intense with it. Like we'd keep the same teams and we'd keep track of like who'd been winning more and stuff. And we kind of culminated it to like finally, like when things were starting to open up, we met up in Daly Park and had a socially distanced picnic. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of so nice to see everybody after having all of these great memories already together.
That's awesome. I do think one of Saga's many strengths is the culture that they help promote. Within just like the teams in general. And that's great, because like COVID was such a hard time to like feel connected to people.
Yeah. Even, you know, like site wide throughout Chicago, like we would still have like the Saga Ball. We still did that. We just did it virtually. And like everybody dressed up, you know, if you wanted to have a drink at home, you had a drink at home. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple of our more charismatic site directors MC, and we had like a really great time.
No, that sounds really fun. I don't know if they did that. I don't know if we had that, but I need them to bring it back. So that sounds so cool.
Yeah, the Saga Ball was so much fun.
Yeah, it's amazing. Were there big challenges you faced? I mean, especially as you entered the classroom, because that was a very different set of responsibilities that you have.
Yeah, I think one thing, and this was, again, specifically because I did my tutoring during COVID, was the first struggle I had was classroom management.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very validating that everyone across the country, you know, veteran teachers, other new teachers, teachers who, you know, didn't teach during COVID, teachers who taught before COVID, they were all saying like, yeah, the behavior is just so different now. It felt validating, but at the same time, it just was such a struggle for like classroom management with the behaviors. That was the one thing I struggled with the most for my first few years. It took me a while, but like the thing about classroom management is you just have to find the style that works best for you. Mm-hmm. That's fit what the students expect of you to a sense, you know. Yeah. Like being a white woman in a predominantly student of color school, like they're going to have perceptions about me. Mm-hmm. There are going to be some that I need to subvert and some that I need to conform to, and you have to find that right balance to make sure that you're being a no-nonsense nurturer, to be, you know, that person that they can come to with their problems, but also the person that's going to push them to be their best self.
Yeah, I really really like that answer a lot, and I think that you touched on something I'm gonna like dig deeper into for myself and for the sake of this is, and those dynamics can be like, you know, complicated to navigate. So I'm kind of curious if you wouldn't mind sharing a bit of maybe ways that maybe internally or externally you thought about how to navigate what you just described.
Yeah. A lot of it is just being honest to a point of appropriateness with the students. Like, you have to be honest and remind them, like, I don't have the same experiences as you. Like, growing up, like, I also, like, I went to private schools growing up. I only started going to public school in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience with education, as well as growing up in a, like, middle-class suburban neighborhood, is very, very different from what you guys experience.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best to be open to learning what you guys experience, to then tailor my classroom to fit your needs. But you got to remember that, like, I don't, like, while I'm the, you know, I'm supposed to be the smartest person in the room as your teacher, I don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
I learn things from you as much as you learn things from me. So just kind of having that open dialogue of like, you got to show me what you need. And I'll show you how I can follow up on that.
Yeah, no, it's a great attitude. I think attitude of like sort of being humble mm-hmm. while also being humble, but also being, you're still the authority. So you still want to maintain that as well.
Kids, I think, oftentimes see like a white teacher in the classroom and get really nervous or annoyed that they're going to have that savior complex. But I try to make it clear off the bat that I'm not the hammer. I'm the toolkit. It's your job to find what works best for you and fix it yourself.
It's a great analogy. Yeah. You definitely don't want to have that savior mindset or have them think of you in that way. Cause I think that's not going to foster a very, they're not going to be able to connect with you, I think, in the ways that you need them and want them to as your student.
Like a moment I had recently was the students that were my students during my student teaching. I taught freshmen. So this past May, June was their graduation. Mm-hmm. And after them being at the beginning of my career for teaching high school English, them being at the beginning of their high school career in general, we got really close really quickly. And then I kind of evolved that relationship with the entire cohort of I became their faculty advisor. I helped them plan, you know, school dances. And we even went to go see Hamilton when it came to Baltimore. And their whole junior year, we talked about like different ways to, you know, get ready for prom and, you know, start prepping for their senior year and all that stuff. So when they found out I wouldn't be there for their senior year, they all got really upset. Like, I promise I will be back for your graduation.
Yeah.
But I tell you, the whole next day, like, I could barely speak because every name that was called meant something to me. And I had a memory with them. Like, it just blew my mind. And to see the student who became the valedictorian go from being the shy, quiet girl who was so terrified to play the whiz when we did the whiz on stage to then speaking in front of like an entire football stadium or basketball stadium at a college of her peers and parents and family members of her peers about her education and her goals for the future, as well as the wishes she has for her peers. To watch that growth, I was like, that wasn't me. That was all her. I may have given her the tools and the spaces to build that, but that was all her.
I just got like chills listening to all that. That's such a meaningful experience to have. And yeah. I mean, it is all the students, but I do think that sometimes, you know, all that, you just having that, like having those few people in their corner, mm-hmm. Makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. In seeing within themselves what they have and what they want to do.
Yep.
So, wow, that was really. What advice would you give to, say, maybe tutors right now, maybe they're about like prospective, so maybe they're about to start their summer training. What advice would you have for them as they start this journey? And specifically, what advice might you have for people who then also want to pursue a further career in education?
I'll start with like specifically for that fellowship year of tutoring. I'm going to be succinct with it. Flexibility can only happen if you overplan. You are going to be like, yes, this is the best lesson ever. They're going to love it. They're going to get it. It's going to be so great. And you're going to put slide one up and you're just going to go, because you're going to go, and you're like, okay, back to the drawing board. Right. And you're going to have to pull something out of thin air. So it's to, you know, be like, okay, I think this is going to be great. But knowing my kids, let me think of what could go wrong. Because again, Murphy's Law, what can go wrong will, right? Mm-hmm. So definitely over plan so that you can be the flexible teacher that you need to be in order to reach all your kids.
That's a really, I like that. I think that's an interesting combination, like over plan so you can be flexible. Because I think a lot of people will say, you know, plan. And then a lot of people also say, well, you know, you have to always be prepared for the unexpected. But I think that's a great point of the.
Nothing will go to plan, so have several.
Yeah, exactly. Literally, yeah. Because I have your plan and then have your backup plan and then have your like supplemental plan to that. Like at each step, have your like, with this kind of flow chart. Well, if they don't get this, then what?
Yeah. And my advice for the tutors that are going to continue on working in education, working towards that certification, working towards just being in schools again in general, my advice for you is that there are going to be moments where you're like, is this even worth it? Is this even what I want to do? I want you to go back to your school setting the next day and find one kid that you have a good relationship with and just have a conversation with them that day. I promise you that feeling of anxiety of, I don't know what I'm doing really, or like, I don't know if I've made the right decision. All of that will go away because at the end of the day, it's not about the score you got on your last essay at grad school. It's not about the score you got on your certification exam. It's not about anything you've done really to get the piece of paper that says you should be a teacher. It's about the kids.
Yeah. retweet, it is about the kids. And more generally, because we're thinking about how to support tutors, do you think there are specific things that Saga could be doing that could help those of them who do want to do that next step?
Yeah, I think a lot of it would be working more into like, okay, like we're going to, you know, train you on how to do our model. But the thing is our model is very new. It's starting to be taught in like trickle down economics into grad school courses. Like some of our mentalities and our mindsets are kind of leaching out through the education world, but it's not all standardized yet.
Yeah.
And I think something that Saga could benefit from is like taking a look at, if they can, you know, some of the curriculum that these certification programs are implementing when training their teachers, and, you know, showing those who want to continue on, like when you know, if you're saying you want to continue to pursue this, here are some things you need to prepare for either seeing or knowing when you get to your certification program. I think kind of like having a more flawless flow through of that career part in your career would make things a lot easier. Like mine was a little bit disjointed. You know, like I was, like I knew all my stuff from Saga, and then I'm learning all my stuff from Urban Teachers, and then I actually got into a real school, and like I had to figure out how to take all of these expectations and meet all of them at the same time. So just kind of like trying to find a way to not compromise on our vision, but also start to meet other people's expectations to make things more flawless transition-wise, I think would be something that they could benefit from.
Yeah, that's a really great insight. And
definitely like being like, on one hand, here's the theory. On the other hand, here's the reality.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen those clash.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I am basically done most of my big questions. Mm-hmm. Big questions. I'm guess while you're here, because I'm generally, what do you think? What are things that like sort of you are on your mind a lot just regarding education in general?
Something I find myself mulling over a lot conversations I always come back to is how we need to start kind of across the board individualizing education, like tailoring things more to specific students rather than just kind of grouping them and hoping that like whatever group we put them in is going to work for them. Mm-hmm. Being a special education teacher now and having worked with, you know, Saga, which is like kind of like small group tutoring, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, doing small groups in my classrooms, and now working with a school where students just kind of get the curriculum and finish it at their own pace. I've seen that like the more that you can learn about a student's personal habits when it comes to education and focusing your instruction towards what works best for them individually is going to make them much more successful. Obviously, right now in public education, that's not a really sustainable
mm-hmm.
method, especially when you're getting 30, 40, 50 kids in your classroom at the same time. You're not going to get to know everything about Sally and Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we set up models more like my current school, where like the kids are given the information, work at their own pace, and get help, get instruction as needed, because some kids, you know, maybe some kids already know how to write an essay, some kids don't. If I can have, you know, Thomas working on his essay because he already knows how to do it, while I help Sally with, you know, kind of fleshing out a good structure for a paragraph and like a good format for a paragraph, that would be most beneficial to both of them. Thomas doesn't feel like he's being talked down to. Sally's getting the help she needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's something I've been thinking about, because I feel like what was so great about Saga, obviously, was the small group setting. So mm-hmm. I like really understood my students. And I've even just been doing like student teaching this summer with like a big class.
Mm-hmm.
This is so hard.
it does not. Yeah, that's the one like culture shock into the ice from Saga to public education is, okay, like I just did so great with these four kids at a time. How do I translate that to 40?
Yeah, basically. It's the answer is that you really can't.
But yeah, and I think something that, and this is probably going to be kind of controversial, we should move away from, is, you know, like officerizing our kids who are like meeting expectations or exceeding expectations. Not every student wants to be a teacher, and not every student can show that they understand things by teaching. Mm-hmm. So finding ways to challenge them, I think also, that don't include like, okay, well, like now you're going to go help someone who's struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not a good metric for knowing that they know the material or that they're above standard all
that's
the time.
That's an interesting point that I don't think I would really thought about. So when you say that, do you mean like say certain students who are those students who maybe they're getting things, they're not needing that like extra support or whatever, like what do you think should be the strategy?
I think the strategy for them is less of like, can you show somebody else how to do it? And more of like, can you show me how to do it out of context?
Okay.
So for example, my last semester of teaching in Baltimore City, I taught SAT prep, which meant I had my cohort that I was faculty advisor for. I had pretty much every single one of them on my roster, which was about 250 kids. Mm-hmm. So I got really close with my cohort in that last year I was working with them. And I noticed that I had like one section that was like majority of the class was coming to me right after an AP course. So they were all the AP section. Yeah. And I also had like, you know, some kids who are like regular gen ed kids and like a couple of special ed education students as well. And my first thought was to be like, okay, well, like I can set up some of these honors kids to help out the kids who are struggling. And when I was getting pushback from that, I started to think, I'm like, oh, that's not what needs to happen here. What needs to happen here is I need them to show me understanding of the concept just out of context. So instead of being like, hey, Artez, can you show Myla how to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I need to be like, hey, Artez, can you show me how that would work in this outlandish scenario that has nothing to do with what we've been working with?
Mm,
and that way, while he's struggling to and like having a good, you know, brain struggle, I can go work with other students who are struggling. That way he's not getting in trouble because he's already understood the project and done it. And they're not being ignored because I'm trying to deal with his behavior issues.
Yeah, you're like pushing them further versus like having them just like say what they already know or something. Is that what you kind of mean?
Because like a lot of times if you're like, oh, help Sally with her homework, they're gonna be like, here's mine, copy.
Yeah.
So it's not always the best strategy. Obviously, if students like volunteer to help, take them up on it. But if you have a student like pushing them to become deputized teachers isn't always the best strategy.
Yeah. Sometimes
it's about finding what intrigues them and showing them that connect of the content to what intrigues them.
Well, that's a really good point. It's also not always, I mean, some students enjoy that, like helping their peers. Yeah. It's not always like fair. Oh, you're doing so great. So now you have to help this person. Like, no, maybe you should get to focus on this next thing.
Yeah.
Like if there's anything we can spend this last like 15 minutes, a little less than 15 minutes sharing, you know, any other ideas, reflections you have about either your experience with Saga, the journey from tutor to teacher. Any other like reflections that you might have that you didn't get to share already.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'll leave you with is talking about extracurriculars. I think that we all you're all for them or you're like, if I'm not being paid, I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think both mindsets can be valid. But my advice to, you know, tutors who are just starting out Saga and thinking about helping out with extracurricular or to Saga tutors who are looking to move into becoming classroom teachers of their own or continue working in education, you're not going to have a lot of energy. But if you find the right extracurricular to bond with your students, it's going to give you that energy back.
Mm.
I started working with a drama club as soon as I moved to that Baltimore school.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I had so many hard days that when I went home at the end of the day, I couldn't tell you why that whole day was bad because of that 1 hour of drama club after class.
It's probably how the students feel too, honestly. Yeah. Some of them,
And I mean, it just was like such a great space where we could just help them work on skills that are also marketable for the job. Feel like, you know, like there's so many different things to do in theater that like, I just really felt like, yes, they're getting to be creative. Yes, they're getting to have their Glee Club moment, but they're also learning skills and they just don't even know it. We're just dressing it up with with costumes and karaoke at this point. But you know, it's just for a lot of them. Yeah. We would do Saturday rehearsals and the incentive was like, yeah, you have to wake up super early and come to school on a Saturday. But when we're done getting through the scenes we need to get through, we'll get pizza and then I'll put the mic up on stage. I'll connect my phone to the Bluetooth speaker and we will have, you know, drama club karaoke.
That sounds so fun. I want to do that.
it was a lot of fun. I mean, like, and like, then of course, like they're like trying to get like the teachers up on stage to do stuff and like, you know, being vulnerable like that also like just kind of was like, okay, great. Like I'm getting, you know, validation back while I'm giving them validation. It's kind of just a nice way to like, stop like putting on these roles of like, I'm in charge and I'm the teacher and you're the student. Like in that moment, we were just artists having fun with art.
Yeah. No, I love that. And that's something I'm looking forward to, honestly, as a teacher. Yeah. Like, I personally am looking forward to the opportunities to be involved. And,
you know, there's a lot of boundaries that you have to keep and maintain in your classroom. You know, with an extracurricular, some of those can come down. And they get to see a side of you that they don't get to see in the classroom, and you get to see a side of them that you don't get to see in the classroom. And then everybody gets to be, you know, more connected and more vulnerable and, you know, just more bonded overall in a way that, you know, the kids are going to remember for the rest of their lives, and you're going to remember for the rest of your lives. I still talk to those drama club kids all the time, even if it is just a phone call real quick for them to be like, Miss Uppy, you were right. And I'm like, I know I was, but what?
That must feel good.
Yes, it is. Other times it's like they're like, why aren't you coming to see us? Like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm busy and I wish I could, but like, let's take this moment now to catch up. You know, but like those relationships that I built in those 3 years that I was there that, you know, now will follow me for the rest of my life. And I feel very lucky and very blessed that I get to have that, you know, after, you know, all of the moments where we struggled to, you know, get on the same page, you know, I'm still the person they come to.
Yeah. Wow. This is great. Yeah. This is great. Yeah, I don't have any other questions for you. This has been a pleasure. You're so passionate.
People, when they're like, what made you want to become a teacher? I tell them, it's what I've been doing my whole life. I was that kid in the classroom that was helping them grade papers. I was the one who was helping, you know, explain to my peers when things got difficult for them. And then high school came around. I had to do National Honor Society, which has, like, you have to do so many hours of tutoring when you're in National Honor Society. And then when I went to undergrad, I got selected to be a peer tutor. In my program. And so they trained me on a very specific curriculum and how to teach and how it works. Like, they even, like, we were talking about, like, metacognition and brain science and psychology, like, way beyond I had ever, like, thought, like, went into teaching. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, I just thought this was just, like, these were just fun creative writing courses. I didn't understand. Didn't know that.
You didn't know you could do this for.
I didn't know that, like, every lesson that I was getting, the model was, like, this one man's life's work. And I got to, like, learn how he, like, you know, came up with the whole thing based in science and based in experimentation, and then got to then implement it as an educator. And like, that's kind of the moment where it kind of clicked for me of like, I could do this my whole life.
Yeah. Wow. That's beautiful. Well, this has been so great, Danielle.
I look forward to it.
Thank you so much.